Well, we're still interviewing poor Moses, and we are being really, really nosy and prying as we ask him questions which all begin with the same phrase, Moses, what was it like? And there have been many, many different things he has come through in his life, many situations and experiences that, well, we can't just imagine. And we'd love to just say, Moses, what was it like? There were others, of course, which were similar to things that we experience. And there again, we'd maybe like to just, well, I know what it was like for me. What was it like for you? So we've asked a number of questions, 28. This is number 29. And a couple of people asked me, you haven't gone through all the questions or all the different ones that we've been doing week by week because I could take up too much time. But if you want a list of them, I will provide you with that. And you'll be able to have them all. The recent ones were these. Moses, what was it like to glimpse the glory of God? Moses, what was it like to launch a new program? Moses, what was it like to see past the distractions? And then the last time, Moses, what was it like to handle rebellion? Well, we're in the book of Numbers and we're at chapter 20. And the question today is, Moses, what was it like to feel? And it's the shortest question. And the one I would least want to talk to Moses about. You know the way when you know something has happened and someone's not very proud of it, you don't want to really upcast it to them. It could have been a longer question. It could have been, Moses, what was it like to feel the Lord? Or Moses, what was it like to feel the people? Or Moses, what was it like to feel yourself? Because his failure in many ways was letting himself down. It was letting the people down. But of course, they weren't his people. They were the Lord's people. So it was also letting the Lord down. See, his life and ministry weren't his own either. His life and ministry belong to the Lord. And it's a question that could have been asked maybe at earlier stages in his personal journey with the Lord. But the point is, this is a different situation here. Because the failure we could have asked him on other occasions was very different, because it would have been the failure perhaps of a zealous young man straight out of the University of Egypt, with no knowledge of or experience of life beyond a palace wall. Note, we're asking this question to Moses now at this stage in his life, at the very end of his life. We're asking it to a mature man, to an experienced man, to a man who has been closer to God than perhaps anyone else since Adam. We're asking it to Moses, the spiritual giant, and that's the one to whom at this stage we are asking the question, Moses, what was it like to feel? So we read Numbers 20 from verse 1. Then came the children of Israel, even the whole congregation, into the desert of Zin in the first month, and the people abode in Kadesh. And Miriam died there and was buried there. And there was no water for the congregation, and they gathered themselves together against Moses and against Aaron. And the people chode with Moses and spake, saying, Would God we had died when our brethren died before the Lord. And why have ye brought up the congregation of the Lord into this wilderness, that we and our cattle should die there? And wherefore have ye made us to come up out of Egypt, to bring us into this evil place? It is no place for seed, or figs, or vines, or pomegranates. Neither is there any water to drink. We'll just end the reading there for now. But as you can see, the chapter opens with where they are, but also mentions just very briefly, just in passing, the death of Miriam. That's all it says. And we've already mentioned, of course, this in relation to the distractions that halted the progress of the new program when we were thinking about chapter 12 of Numbers. But time has moved on, quite a lot of time, because whenever we thought about the curse that the Lord pronounced upon the people for their reaction to the two spies, you come back with the positive report from Canaan. And the Lord just said to them, that's it. This generation will not see the promised land. But he then prophesied at that time, but it would take the remaining time, possibly about 38 years, for that generation to just die one by one. And in some cases, in a group of numbers, whenever there are rebellions and different things happened. But it would take that length of time for that to be accomplished. And they would be in the wilderness for all of that unnecessary time. So a lot of time has passed until this moment. And now the 12 tribes are at Kadesh. Notice the details here. The people complained and ganged up, as usual, on Moses and Aaron. There's nothing new in that at all. That has been the story, hasn't it? This has happened many times before, and Moses, sometimes with Aaron, had brought the situation before the Lord in prayer, and often times they had fallen down, prostrated themselves before the Lord in earnestness as they've called out to God. And guess what? They do the same here. Verse 6, and Moses and Aaron went from the presence of the assembly unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and they fell upon their faces, and the glory of the Lord appeared unto them. So a pattern is being followed here. And once again the Lord speaks to Moses and gives him the game plan, the divine strategy for handling the complainers. Not only that, he reminds Moses and Aaron that he is with them. Remember, Moses said, I'm not going to go with this bunch of people unless I'm assured of your presence. And here we find the glory of the Lord appears at the tabernacle. So all of this is good, all of this is positive, all of this is something that Moses would recognize, and this is a way he has come before, this is familiar to him. Well, then we read this from verse 7. The Lord spake unto Moses, saying, take the rod, and gather thou the assembly together, thou and Aaron thy brother, and speak ye unto the rock before their eyes, and it shall give forth his water. And thou shalt bring forth to them water out of the rock, so thou shalt give the congregation and their livestock, their beasts, drink. Now in reading the history up to this point, haven't we remarked over and over again how that Moses did exactly what the Lord had told him to? That's wonderful. That's so praiseworthy for Moses. He had done that. But this time it's different. It has been 40 years since he started leading this company into the wilderness. The curse of the Lord during that time had taken its toll. Read about that curse in Numbers 13 if you were interested, 32 to 33. But now that purging time is almost up. They're almost there, promised land. It's close. Because the Lord has said how long that time would be and what would happen then after that. So it's getting close. The signs are there. Just as we mentioned to the children, God has given us signs as well regarding the nearness of his return. Do you believe the signs are around us? But what manner of people ought we to be? So, Moses and Aaron have sought the Lord, they've been assured of his presence, and God has given instructions. Surely, after all this time, Moses will be able to keep a lid on his frustration with the people. He's a seasoned and experienced leader. He's 120 years of age, or thereabouts. He leaves the tabernacle where he had joined Aaron in prayer, and where the glory of the Lord had appeared. And he prepares to carry out God's plan for miraculously solving the problem of the lack of drinking water in the camp. so the instructions were these. Collect the rod, that rod that had been used on so many occasions to demonstrate the power of God. Collect the rod. Gather the people. Speak to the rock. Do it in full audience of the people. And the Lord said, what was that? And water will flow from that rock, miraculously, flow from that rock. And it would be sufficient to sustain them, to keep watering the people and their livestock. So, what happens? Verse 9. Moses took the rod from before the Lord as he commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the congregation together before the rock. And he said unto them, hear now, ye rebels, must we fetch you water out of this rock? And Moses lifted up his hand with his rod, and with his rod, sorry, he smote the rock twice, and the water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank, and their beasts also. Now you could be mistaken for reading that very quickly, for thinking that because the water came and the people were able to drink and their animals, that all was well. But it's anything but. Of those four things God said for Moses to do, what did he do? Well, he collected the rod. That was good. Moses and Aaron gathered the people. That was good. But then Moses went badly off course. So you could say he was half obedient. Can we afford to be half obedient? And yet, that's sometimes what we've been like in life. The Lord expects complete obedience. But so often we're not completely disobedient. And therein lies the problem, because that's how we can fool ourselves. We're not completely obedient, but we're not fully obedient. And half obedient is not good enough. Moses went off course. And this deviation seems to have been enough to send him completely out of control for a moment. Moses, what was it like to feel? So what was going on? Because it's hard for us to understand how this could have happened when we think about the opportunities before and even the fact that water came from a rock before. And he had listened to the complaining of the people all this time. And on occasions, Moses had been the one who, when God was frustrated with them, Moses had pleaded with the Lord and interceded for them. So what has gone wrong now? What was going on? Well, in our recent studies, which was this long period before, this real big gap has elapsed. So let's say around 38 years ago, God had vindicated Moses and Aaron as chosen leader and chosen high priest, respectively. He had done so publicly and openly before the people, the majority of whom must now be dead. Isn't it interesting that in all those years when that older generation who left Israel as responsible adults, that whenever they saw all of their friends, their family members, their siblings, their parents, when they saw them all die, as God said it would happen, that instead of teaching the next generation, teaching their children and their grandchildren, warning them about God taking things seriously, taking sin seriously, instead of them doing that, do you know what they managed to pass on to the next generation? They pass on all their complaining. They pass on all their grumbling. You know what you'll discover, parents and grandparents? Kids and grandchildren will pick up your little nuances, your little quirky faults probably quicker than the good things. And this is what happened. They picked up all the discontent. And that was there present in this new generation at the end of this period when God had whittled down the rest. Practically all of those present before Moses and Aaron on this occasion had either been born in the wilderness wanderings or had been under the age of 20 when they left Egypt. And here's the thing I find most amazing. If that is so, why were they still looking back to Egypt? Because some of them had been very small when they left and others had never known Egypt. Isn't that a puzzle? They seem to have far more of an appetite for looking back than they had for looking forward to the promised land. That puzzles me. But then, of course, there is that little word that we kept reading about in the book of Hebrews. Unbelief. Lack of faith. That's what was missing. And that's something that seemed to just be one generation after the other. So that's the kind of people, that group, that Moses is standing in front of. The people who have buried their mothers, fathers, aunts, uncles, grandmothers, grandfathers during those years of unbelief in the wilderness. These are the faces that Moses looks into as he's about to carry out God's plan of action. So things are different here. And he's overcome. We would use the expression, something snapped. Because having done the first two things that God had asked him to do out of the four, he didn't then go on and speak to the rock. He spoke to the people. Instead of speaking to the rock, he spoke to the people. And he says in the end of verse 10, and he said unto them, hear now, ye rebels, must we fetch you water out of this rock? And Moses lifted up his hand with his rod and did something God didn't ask him to do, smote the rock twice. And in spite of that, the water came out. Moses has had some anger issues. Is there anybody here and you have some anger issues? Maybe I should ask the spouses or the children. Not talking about road rage, because that affects the very best of us. But do you have anger issues? Way back in the beginning of Exodus chapter 2 from verse 11, we read this. And it came to pass in those days when Moses was grown. So that's just immediately from being rescued from the little basket, the little ark in the Nile. And when Moses was grown, that he went out unto his brethren, his kinspeople, the Hebrews, and looked on their burdens, and he spied an Egyptian smiting a Hebrew, one of his brethren. And he looked this way and that way, and when he saw that there was no man, he slew the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. The man with anger issues. But that's a man who hadn't had those encounters with God. That's a man who hadn't been for the 40 years training in the wilderness, the back of beyond, the desert. Acts 7 tells us of that period that he was approaching the age of 40. And then soon after that, he's before Pharaoh. And soon after he has been in the period of testing and trying. And we read about him standing before Pharaoh in Exodus 11 and verse 8. And he goes out from Pharaoh having asked him about letting the people go, and he went out in hot anger. Now, here on this occasion, we are told of his hot anger, but otherwise we wouldn't have known about that, because there's nothing then to follow that shows us the outworking of that. He felt that within, but it didn't find an expression in his actions. So perhaps then his training had been working because he was able to keep a lid on it. Then eventually, a short time later, after the 10 plagues, came Passover night. And we read then of how he had shown anger, but his reactions were different. But in each of those cases, he was angry with the enemies of God. The Egyptian taskmaster, an enemy of God's people, therefore an enemy of God. Pharaoh himself, the enemy of God's people, therefore the enemy of God. But then we read of his anger again. And this time it's towards the congregation of Israel. Do you remember the party at the base of Sinai? When he was there encountering God and receiving the Ten Commandments and the tables, and he comes down, and what does he see? Aaron has made a golden calf, and they're all dancing in this way that is an abomination to God. And he is outraged. And we read in Exodus 32 and 19, it came to pass as soon as he came nigh unto the camp, saw the calf and the dancing, Moses' anger waxed hot. And he cast the tables of stone out of his hands and brake them beneath the mount. What the Egyptian taskmaster did wasn't against Moses personally. And the hardness and stubbornness of Pharaoh's heart, again, wasn't against Moses personally. And the idolatrous calf worship wasn't against Moses personally, but it was against the Lord. But somehow, when we get to this passage in Numbers chapter 20, that Moses seems to take it personally. In fact, I would suggest, because we have this time lapse which connects us with the events that we've discussed in our recent studies, that Moses expected God to vindicate him again. Because that's what happened. God had vindicated him as leader, and Aaron, do you remember the rods, the one that budded? We've only just done that. As the chosen high priest. And perhaps Moses, all these years later, expected that God again would vindicate him. But the Lord doesn't do that. He just tells him to go out, and you see these grumbling, murmuring people? I'm going to give them water anyway. And I think Moses wasn't happy with that, wasn't content with that. This was a generous response from the Lord, but it didn't involve Moses and Aaron being vindicated before the people. And it did involve the people, without being chastised, receiving what they grumbled about. Because you remember they'd asked about quails, but God gave them that much, they were sick, and some of them died. And things like that. That wasn't happening all these years later. And I believe these things are differences. These things help us to understand why Moses was outraged. And that's very different, because that suggests to me that Moses was angry with God. We get angry with God at times, if we're honest. Because things happen and we blame God. Because we know we have a God who can do anything, it's so easy for us to just pin the blame for everything on God. We forget that we're living in a fallen world. And these things will happen to us. Bad things happen. And we can sometimes also be angry with God. Well, what did the hot anger of Moses make him do? It made him disobey God's instructions. And it's hard to believe that Moses' anger led him to this. When he had done so well, his testimony was so clear, there were years of faithfulness here, in spite of all the complaining and things that we had talked about previously. When he received the law of God from Sinai, he was given detailed instructions regarding the construction of a new place of worship, the tabernacle. And you know, we read that he did exactly as the Lord asked him to do. Even in Hebrews 8 and 5, that's mentioned how that these things were shadows, pictures, illustrations of unseen things, heavenly realities. And it was important that Moses made it exactly to God's pattern because of the fact that they spoke of heavenly things. So Moses knew that. And Moses did exactly what the Lord asked him to on that occasion. He must have also thought about the rich symbolism that there had been in the Passover, because there was a lot of odd things God asked him to do on Passover night. The application of the blood. So on. Then there was the manna from heaven, God's unique provision. And as we look back on these things, we can see that each of these things spoke of something grand, something great, something glorious. Spoke of Jesus. Spoke of redemption. Spoke of the way of salvation. So therefore, it was important from God's perspective that what Moses was asked to do, he did it as God had asked him to do. And Paul makes a connection for us that helps us understand the seriousness of what Moses did in not speaking to the rock, but striking the rock. 1 Corinthians from chapter 10 from verse 1 says, "Moreover, brethren, I would not that ye should be ignorant how that all our fathers were under the clouds and all passed through the sea," speaking of this period of release from Egypt, "as all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and all did eat the same spiritual meat, and did all drink the same spiritual drink. For they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them. That rock was Christ. But with many of them, God was not well pleased. For when they were overthrown in the wilderness." Now these things were examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. The rock spoke of Jesus. Jesus, the source of satisfaction for people like us walking in this world, which really, in comparison to the things of God, should be a wilderness for us. The sad thing is, for many Christians, this world's a brilliant place for them. You see, the day that we start thinking like that and stop longing for heaven and home, we're as bad as these people we're talking about here. And I think that's one of the biggest shifts I can see from my childhood. And people coming who came from backgrounds where they hadn't a great deal. They had a tough life. And they just wanted to come into the house of God. And you know what they wanted to sing about? Heaven. And I even see a difference today. There's much more of us in the world and the world in us. This world is not my home. I'm just passing through. That's easier said than believed. Jesus should be the source of our satisfaction today. Instead of that, he's just the add-on for the difficult times. There's a big difference. And in order for Jesus to bring that spiritual blessing, that satisfaction for our thirsty spiritual souls, he had to be smitten on the cross. And that was done once. One sacrifice for sins forever. And Moses had already struck the rock at Horeb. And that's why God said, "Speak to the rock." You know, the fact that Jesus has been smitten once for us, struck once for us at Calvary. Do you know how we receive blessings thereafter? We speak to the rock. Have you spoken to the rock this morning? Have you said as you came to this meeting, "Lord, I want to be refreshed by you. I want to drink of you. I want to feed on you. I want you, really. I will not be satisfied, Lord, with anything but you." And that's how we continue to know the blessing. We speak to the rock. What else did anger make Moses do? It made him rob God of his glory. Because in Numbers, then, 20, the end of verse 10, "Now hear ye rebels, must we fetch you out water from this rock? Me and Aaron? Aren't we the boys?" God had already given the go-ahead without questioning the murmuring of the people. God hadn't sent them to call them rebels. God gave no opinion of the complainers at this time. As far as the Lord was concerned, this was a straightforward situation. "I have the power to do this. I will do this. You're the means by which I will do this. And you will speak to the rock and the water will come." End of story. So what's happening here is Moses isn't speaking for God. And that's serious. Do you know, that's serious in Northern Ireland today, because as I'm in this pulpit, and I trust by the grace of God, I'm being faithful to the word of God. But I know, and I've sat under people in other places, so-called ministers, and they're not speaking for the God of the Bible. They're not speaking for the God of the Bible. This is a serious thing. You don't think I take it lightly. That's why we always say, the Bible says, the Bible says, the Bible says. Moses wasn't speaking for God this time. This is the man who'd so carefully done that, who had heard God and had been God's messenger. He had been God's spokesperson. What a dangerous thing for the recognized messenger of the Lord to deliver a message that didn't come from him. Moses should have said nothing and let the power of God just do what God wanted it to do. You know, in Ecclesiastes 3 from verse 1, we often quote that little phrase, "To everything there is a season, a time to every purpose under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die." But you know what it also says in there? A time to keep silence and a time to speak. Do you ever think about that? Because there's some of us, when we should be speaking, we're not speaking. That loved one. What happens when they're in eternity? It's too late. There's a time to speak. But then there was also a time to keep silence. A time when perhaps we would love to have forced our opinions on others or stirred up a bit of strife. That was the time to keep silence. The miracle was all that was needed. It was all that God felt was needed. The power of God was all that God felt was required. And then Moses opened his mouth and he said, "We." There are plenty of places today, places of worship, and whenever you're chatting to those who go there, it's "we are doing this, we are doing that, we are doing the other." And many of these things are commendable, and many places like this are being blessed. We. But it's not about we. You know what would be great for us to say as we interact with others is to say, "The presence of the Lord is in Monkstown." That's very different, isn't it? Try that. Try telling others about it. "You know something? Don't know. There's nothing in us, but the presence of the Lord is in our meetings." You know what we read in Mark chapter 2 from verse 1 about Jesus? "Again, he entered into Capernaum after some days, and it was noised that he was in the house." In other words, the word got out. "And straightway many were gathered together, so much that there was no room to receive them, no, not so much as about the door, and he preached the word unto them." What made the difference? What was the drawing power? Jesus was there. What else did Moses' anger make him do? Made him fail to trust God. Verse 12. "The Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron, because ye believed me not to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel. Therefore, ye shall not bring this congregation into the land which I have given them." So this is God's opinion. "Because you didn't believe me to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel, or didn't trust that what God was doing was the best thing. It's not a terrible thing for a human to actually do, is to question. And that's really what Moses was doing. Moses did his own thing, and he questioned God. And God says, you didn't trust me. And that's doubt. That's questioning. That's failure. Moses, what was it like to fail? What else did Moses' anger make him do? It made him misrepresent God. When Moses was given a glimpse of the glory of God, you remember in the cleft of the rock, and the glory of the Lord passed by? That wasn't all that happened that day. God also gave Moses a revelation of his name and his character. Exodus 34 from verse 6. And the Lord passed by before him and proclaimed, the Lord God. And listen to this. Merciful, gracious, long-suffering, abundant in goodness and truth, keeping mercy for thousands, forgiving iniquity and transgression and sin, and that, here's an interesting bit, will by no means clear the guilty. Moses, you have not been representing my long suffering in the action of speaking to the people roughly and striking the rock twice. But God says, but I'm going to have to keep all that I said that day when I spoke to you. I just can't overlook this. I will by no means clear the guilty. What else did the anger of Moses make him do? Ultimately, it made him lose out on promised blessing. How often has that not happened? How often have we not seen people become all worked up and have others to encourage them, inflamed within the assemblies of God's people, and they've gone off and they've lived in the difficulties, really, been unhappy and missed out on blessing. Ye believe me not, ye shall not bring this congregation. They brought it this far. They were nearly there. It was so close. But you will not bring them into the land which I have given them. Whenever we looked at the fruit of the Spirit, we found there love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. But the long-suffering, we discovered, was made up of words that mean long-tempered, having a long fuse. You know the thing about this story that comes to my mind in closing? This wasn't all about God putting up with the children of Israel, because Moses was just a sinner saved by grace, like the best of them. God was also putting up with Moses. And that's a lesson, a humbling lesson for all leaders, even good leaders, even faithful leaders, even leaders who have led for many, many years, leaders who are looked up to. Here's the reality. God has been putting up with them in exactly the same way as he's been putting up with the most failing and faltering of believers. The success you see, or any of us see in our life, is not the product of mine or your spiritual perfection. No, the success we see is in spite of our imperfections. God is just as long-suffering with me as he is with you, as he was with the men who I looked up to. God is just as long-suffering with everyone And we need never forget that. And I believe Moses did. They then call those waters that flowed at that place Meribah, meaning strife or conflict. And then towards the end of the chapter, we just simply read about the death of Aaron. So things are coming close to the end of their journey. I wonder you're here today and you're not saved. Remember what we said to the boys and girls earlier? Don't run out of time. Do you know how close you are to the end of your journey? I don't know how close I am. All I know is I'm ready to go. Be in time.